Hey, podcast listeners, you are going to love my conversation with Dr. John Whitmore. He is a creation geologist. He looks at the world and he says, there's no doubt about it. There was a flood. The geology is evidence of that. And we contrast. Now, I'm going to play in this conversation, I'm going to play a little bit of the devil's advocate, okay? Look up some stuff online and actually try to confront him with what are the facts and why are we coming to different conclusions. You're going to love today's conversation.
It's very hard to date the Earth because any dating method, whether it be radioactivity or other types of methods, those are all based on assumptions. The best way, I think, to date things is with an eyewitness, with a person that was there and told us what happened, told us when he did it.
Welcome to the Creation Today Show, where we bring together interviews with experts and solid Bible teaching. Your host, Eric Hovind, affirms the ultimate authority of God's Word, the truth of creation, and why it matters to you.
Why do some geologists study the Earth and come to the conclusion that the Earth is old? And other geologists study the Earth and come to the conclusion it's actually young. Is there such a thing as old Earth geology and young Earth geology, or evolutionary geology and creation geology? Or is it just geology? Well, to figure this out and to help us understand why some people come to different conclusions about the age of the Earth using geology, I've invited a friend to the show. He's been a professor of geology at Cedarville University since 1991, and he's one of my favorite tour guides. He was one of my guides as I trekked down the Colorado River. His love and his knowledge for geology and his love and his knowledge for God and the Bible make him an absolute gem, if I can use that word, to the world of creation geology, if that's even a thing, which is what we're going to find out today in the show. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Dr. John Whitmore. Dr. John, welcome to the Creation Today Show, sir.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Well, I need to set the stage for us. You are a professor of geology, so I don't know if you've been online lately. Do you ever get online and search the internet for stuff?
Not about me.
Well, I wasn't going to set the stage on you. Your field of geology, though, I don't know if you realize this, there's a huge debate over the age of the Earth out there, and everybody seems to be looking at the exact same evidence. It's like we're looking at the same rocks, but we're coming to different conclusions. So I thought I'd share with you what some of those incredibly trusted sources out there called Google, or that you can Google, are actually saying about the age of the Earth, because you probably haven't heard this. Maybe you've been living under a rock as a geologist. The National Geographic Society said this: they have examined rocks from the moon and from meteorites, neither of which have been altered by the rock cycle, and they've used the same techniques of radiometric dating that have been used on those rocks on Earth. All the data from the Earth and beyond has led to the estimate that our Earth is 4.5 billion years old. That's not all. I mean, I know that might surprise you, but that's not all. I got another one. Space.com agrees. Space.com says the oldest rocks on Earth found to date are the Acoustic Gneiss in northwestern Canada near the Great Slave Lake, and they're 4.03 billion years old. But don't worry, rocks older than 3.5 billion years can be found on all continents. And you call yourself a geologist who believes in creation. What do you have to say about that, sir?
Yeah, those dates are pretty large, aren't they? And it's hard to even comprehend how big they might be. And I've been trained at a number of different places, and my first place I was trained was at a secular university. And so I learned all about the age of the Earth and stuff like that. But one of the things that really impacted me is that, you know, whenever you get a date, the date is really an interpretation of data. And that interpretation of data is based on assumptions that you make, and those assumptions can't be tested. And so, you know, all those assumptions, it's been able to show that, that many of those assumptions we can't trust. So, and on the other hand, I would say that it's very hard to date the Earth because any dating method, whether it be radioactivity or other types of methods, those are all based on assumptions. And so the best way I think to date things is with an eyewitness, you know, with a person that was there and told us what happened, told us when he did it. So
now I get where you're going with this. You're saying, hey, let's take a look at the Bible and let's figure this out, see what God actually says about this. I'm curious, in the world of geology, obviously, this is your whole life. This is what you do. I was fascinated to learn so much information going through, and I hope you don't give me a quiz today on the layers to the Grand Canyon that I had it memorized on that.
I know you did.
10-day trip. Yeah. Bright Angel, Muav, somewhere down the red wall limestone, and Friday, you could list them right now, couldn't you? Yeah, every single
I
layer.
Could, yeah.
Just means we need another trip so I can have a refresher course. That would be
That's
fun.
Right.
So the world of geology, though, it really makes it. I mean, you look online and there's an overwhelming number of sources claiming Christians are wrong, we're right. The .gov websites, our official government websites, are all saying that evolution is true. The Earth is 4.4565. That's how close they got it. Billion years old. Okay. Walk us through geology. Is it, and answer the question, is it possible to be a creation geologist, and why have you come to those kind of conclusions? And maybe we can get into some of those assumptions you were talking about, because some geologists would say, oh, that's just very dismissive. He doesn't even know what he's talking about if he can't talk about it specifically. So let's dive into this conversation and tell us what we need to know. Are you really a creation geologist?
I was hit right in the face with this as a freshman in college. I was a Christian coming into school and, you know, started to learn in my very first geology classes that very first year about evolution, about the age of the Earth, and so on. And I struggled almost immediately. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. Genesis doesn't tell me anything about this. And I was to the point where I was literally either ready to give up my faith or give up geology. I knew that, you know, they were so diametrically opposed, or appeared to be so diametrically opposed, that I couldn't hold on to both. And as I began to investigate further and read further, I began to understand that I read Darwin, read The Origin of Species as a freshman, and really began to think about some things I was learning about paleontology and fossils. And I think it was the fossil record that I was primarily interested in. And I saw pretty quickly that paleontology, there were some problems with evolution in paleontology. And you would think is that paleontology would be the best evidence for evolution. But as we saw in the Grand Canyon, Eric, you know, right in those very first layers, we get all the fossils, all the types of fossils that we see throughout the whole fossil record in that very first layer, the Tapete sandstone. And that's true around the world, that, you know, the fossil record doesn't start off gradually and go from simple to complex. We see complexity right from the beginning. And as a freshman, I learned, you know, that's a real problem. And, you know, the evolution I was getting taught in the classroom wasn't the reality that I saw out in the field. And so when I began to see those chinks in the armor, I began to investigate further about things like the age of the Earth and how fast rocks were laid down and things like that.
I spent an hour and a half talking to a geology professor at the University of Florida. I had set up a display with some fossils and said, fossils prove the flood, prove me wrong. Well, he had some students come up and say, you're not gonna believe what this guy's doing down there. He's like, I'll go talk to him. Came down, we spent an hour and a half talking together. And his arguments were, how come we don't find centipedes with T-Rexes? How come we don't find this with this? How come it's a constant gradual, you know, the fossils go from simple to complex? How come? And it was your classic arguments for old Earth interpretation. Son of a missionary, come to find out, and now geology professor at University of Florida, and just could not buy. He said, no, we dismissed the flood idea that the layers were formed by the flood, you know, over 100 years ago. That idea is gone now. Science has disproven it. So, you could tell I wasn't going to change his mind, because I went through, well, what about polystrata fossils? What about a couple different things? And he just seemed very dismissive, you know, without a lot of information behind it. Oh, well, we've got cypress trees that can grow in swamps. So yeah, well, you can get trees that grow through many layers. And anyway, how would you approach the subject? Why is it that we're coming to two totally different conclusions?
Yeah. The first thing that I saw, Eric, was that, you know, I was, what got me interested in geology was collecting fossils, and we have different fossils here in Ohio than you guys have down in Florida and Georgia and whatnot. But we have marine fossils that cover the state of Ohio. And that might make kind of some sense from being from Florida that you have marine fossils down there. But I'm thinking, you know, why are there marine fossils here in Ohio? And then as a junior in high school, I went west and I saw, oh, I can collect shark teeth in Kansas. And, you know, I can stand on the edge of the Grand Canyon, 7,000 feet above sea level, and see, you know, corals and sponges and things like that down at my feet. And I'm like, sea level used to be a lot higher. And, you know, I the evolutionary explanation of things made sense to me as I was taught it, but I didn't get taught, you know, the problems and difficulties with it. And as I began to see some of the problems and difficulties, you know, I began to realize that, you know, I began to look back towards Scripture, and Scripture says that all the earth was covered with marine water, right, during the flood.
Yes. And,
you know, in all of my geology classes, they never taught me how marine water could cover continents. Continents are made of lightweight material, and they float. And how do you get oceans to cover whole continents, and not just whole continents, but continents all over the world at the same time? I just got done teaching a class last hour, and we're talking about Derek Eggers' little book, The Nature of the Stratigraphical Record, conventional geologist. But, you know, that's one of the things he recognized. He recognized that these persistent types of rock you find all around the world on tops of continents. And he didn't say how the rocks got on top of the continents, but, you know, he made the observation that we have all these special types of rocks covering the continents, and they all appear during the same special periods of time. And I think stuff like that just screams Noah's flood. It just screams that, you know, there's the same thing happening all over the world at the same time on tops of the continents. And at times when we had oceans on top of the continents.
So I guess you're just not familiar with the evidence, Dr. John, because you have not read from the National Library of Medicine. The National Library of Medicine, this is from a book published by our government, says perhaps the most persuasive fossil evidence revolution is the consistency of the sequence of fossils from early to recent. Nowhere on Earth do we find, for example, mammals in the Devonian or strata, or human fossils coexisting with dinosaur remains. So maybe you're just not familiar with their information that they've got out there, yeah, Dr. John. Maybe that's the problem.
I am very familiar. And it's not like they don't have good points. They do have some good points. And, you know, some of these questions have been posed to creationists, like, you know, why aren't humans and dinosaurs found together and stuff like that? Those are actually pretty good arguments and things that we need to grapple with. And it's not, you know, these are pretty smart scientists that are saying these things, and they got, you know, good reasons for their understanding. But, you know, when you go out and look at all the evidence, you just can't look at part of it and look at the part of the evidence that you like. You have to consider it all. And this evidence of things with marine rock layers that cover entire continents, you know, they don't consider that part of the record. And, you know, with dinosaurs and humans, we don't know the answer to that. And, you know, one of the things I'm hesitant about as a scientist is, you know, I like to make up theories and and talk about things where there's actually some rocks and fossils and so forth to talk about. When we don't have humans and dinosaurs, how in the world can we come up with answers for that? That's, you know, we just have to speculate. And as a scientist, I don't like to speculate. I like to make my statements based on data that we can actually see. Now, it's not that I don't have any answers or any ideas about, you know, dinosaurs and humans not occurring together. I do. But it's speculative.
So is there, and this is where that professor went that I talked to for an hour and a half. I said, but hang on, are there some built-in assumptions to your questions? Would we expect it? First of all, have we found all the fossils there to find? Granted, in the last 200 years, we've found a lot of fossils. But would we expect to find these certain fossils together? So talk through some of those assumptions that you mentioned. I know your assumptions in radiometric dating, which I want to get into that, and assumptions in how we view the geologic record as well.
Yeah, we don't actually know if dinosaurs and humans actually lived in the same place before the flood or not. As creationists, we think the flood record is a record of most of the animals that were alive before the flood. So, you know, if I go out to the Grand Canyon and I see rocks and those fossils in those rocks, I think those are fossils that were probably alive on the day before the flood and they got buried. But scripture also tells us how utterly catastrophic and destructive the flood was. And you were with me when we walked up Blacktail Canyon and looked at that great unconformity contact. And then I told you guys how many thousands of feet of rock were eroded away at that point, even before the first flood layer was laid down. And, you know, there's just incredible destruction during the flood. And most people have the idea that maybe the flood was like a bathtub filling up, that it just filled up and didn't really do anything. And then the water, you know, drained back into the oceans. But what we see in the rock record is that, no, that's not the case. It was incredibly destructive. And, you know, we're just beginning to figure out models and understand reasons why different animals appear in sequence in the fossil record. And that's one thing that evolutionists often bring up, is the sequence that we see in the rock record is explained by evolution. And that's certainly a very elegant explanation for evolution. But, you know, we as creationists need to come up with a better explanation on that. And, you know, that's some of the things that I hope that my geology students will do in their career. It's not going to be solved by one or two people. It's probably going to be solved by a whole bunch of biblical creationists who have both geological and biological training working together. And so I have confidence that those questions can be solved.
I am excited about the future of, by the way, am I allowed to call it creation geology?
Sure.
Is that even?
Yeah.
Okay. So I feel really excited about creation geology because it feels like this, the whole field of geology was born and then developed with old Earth ideas as the very core of geology. And it's not until, I mean, we've understood young Earth creation, and that's been arguments for the last for decades. But it's just now that we're really getting into some good hardcore study of geology from a creation perspective to start creating these models, as you say, and coming up with answers of things that we see from the biblical creation perspective. So I feel almost like we've got a late start on everybody else. But we also know that we got a true start, a true foundation to build from. Does that sound about where we're at? And how many more geologists could you use?
I mean, the study of geology is a relatively new field of science compared to things like chemistry and biology and things like that. Geology, even conventional geology, has only been around for 150, 200 years. And Lyell published what was considered one of the first geology books, comprehensive geology books, in 1831. And so that's not even been 200 years yet. But, you know, from very early on, there were Christians that tried to understand the rocks from a biblical perspective, you know, to be fair. But, you know, Lyell was such a good writer and such a persuasive writer. And I think it was the period of time that Lyell was writing as well, that, you know, he was able to persuade many people to really give up the Mosaic way of looking at things, including Charles Darwin. Charles Lyell was incredibly influential in Darwin, as Darwin wrote The Origin of Species and was thinking about evolution and animal life and so forth. And, you know, even Darwin wasn't, you know, universally accepted at first. It took some time. But, of course, those things have won out in our modern world, I think primarily because it's a godless way of explaining things. And, you know, I think man has been down that path for a long time, seeking to try to understand everything in a godless way, because man doesn't want to be accountable to anybody, right? So I think men tend to gravitate toward evolutionary understanding, a uniformitarian understanding of the past, to avoid that accountability issue.
The professor I spoke with said, in order to prove the flood, because I said, what would it take for me to convince you the flood happened? He said, Eric, we would have to have an absolute starting point where you could show me that's where the flood started. And you'd have to show an upper boundary of where it finished. You'd have to be able to show that, and you'd have to show that around the world. But right there is that great inconformity. Talk about, do we have that? And then you're going to have to do it in like 2 minutes or less. And then we're going to have to continue on the other side of the break. But 2 minutes or less, do we actually have that? Can we see that today?
Yeah, I think we can see that in the Grand Canyon. We can see the beginning of the flood. The beginning of the flood was a geological event. It talks about in Genesis 7:11, the fountains of the great deep breaking open, the heavens opening up, and that's going to do a lot of geological work that would be really easy to pick out in the rock record. And of course, we would expect to see marine deposits right above that. We would expect to see a sudden inundation of life forms and stuff like that getting buried, and that's exactly what we see. The end of the flood is a little bit more difficult to pick out. Biblically, it's when Noah gets off the ark, and you know that might be a hard thing to pick out in the rock record. But Paul Garner and I have actually written in our creation journals about that kind of thing and how we go about picking out the beginning of the flood and the end of the flood as geologists. And so there's criteria that we've established or suggested for each of those events. And I think it can be done in the rock record. And so as an answer to your friend that you're talking to, we've done that. And I'd be interested in him taking a look at that and see what he says. I bet he doesn't change his mind.
And that's the problem. Ultimately, yeah. The evidence doesn't change their mind. They've got confirmation bias on everything they've learned. Okay, I want to continue because we got to get into some of the assumptions that you talked about with radiometric dating. Another argument, he said, oh yeah, we used to use potassium argon. Now we use argon. It's way more accurate. Now we've gotten rid of all those assumptions that you're talking about. We have no assumptions now, so we're good to go. I want to ask you about the erosion rates. I mean, from my understanding, continents would erode in less than 14 million years. So yeah. How can you have rock older than that? Anyway, we've got a lot to talk about, but social media, I need to let you guys go. Thank you guys for hanging out with us for the first half of the conversation. If you want to join the other half of the show, come on over to creationtoday.org. Partner with us and let's reach the world with this truth. There really are creation geologists that are scientific, that are looking at the data and coming to the proper understanding of what actually took place. Before I let social media go, Dr. John, what's the best place for people to go to get a hold of your work? Because I know you got the ICC, the International Conference on Creation, your research society publications, things like that. Is there a place they can go to get your information specifically?
Yeah, as far as my publications, most of those can be found on the Cedarville University website. So people can go over to Cedarville University, go to the library, and there's a place there called Digital Commons. And they have a lot of lists of publications and even available publications of the faculty here at Cedarville.
I love it. Well, I'm glad you guys are doing that work. And please go there, Cedarville University, cedarville.edu, if I recall correctly. check out the work that they're doing. The data really is there to support what Dr. John is saying. I look forward to seeing you guys next week. Next week, got a great show for you. Does archaeology confirm the New Testament or New Testament archaeology with Chris Ashcraft? And it's really going to be a great conversation. Does what we see in the world, the scientific world of archaeology, match what the Bible tells us? We'll have a look at that next week. We'll see you then. Well, that'll give you a couple of more bullets in your arsenal to help you understand that geology really does confirm a global flood. Hey, I'd love you to listen to the rest of this conversation as we get into some of John's personal life, what's going on, and the future of creation geology. Come on over to creationtoday.org to enjoy that. God bless. Would love it if you'd leave us a rating or share this podcast with a friend.